Right, there's a few builders here, and they go, yeah, it's not a builder, mate. No way. Right? And, you know, he's got this strange halo. It would have kind of been hard to get around and knocked into things. And he always does a random pose, right? Some sort of a strange way. Maybe he was uncomfortable about how he held his arms or something. But it just doesn't look like a real guy, right? It doesn't look like me or you. I'm glad, but he was different to people's expectations, right? And I think we can, from what I've just said, you know, I think maybe Jesus looks a little different than that. But I think maybe the people that painted those sort of things were trying to paint him as a divine human, right? So trying to paint him as this perfect human being. But I think his hands would have been calloused, and he would have been a little bit, I don't know, hairy and kind of mongrel. I don't know, but move along, Miss Brendan. Right. He was different to their expectations, right, though. He had a massive impact on the people that he came into contact with. I wonder, am I like that? Am I different from their expectations? People think of Christians a certain way, and that's up to them and their backgrounds, but when they encounter me, is it different? Is it like they've encountered Jesus in that same way? So, you know, I work in a workplace where, I mean, a lot of Christians, they have a bit of a negative rap sometimes, and I hear about it. But am I different? Am I somehow different to that? That's what I want us to think about today. Jesus' character traits. What sort of guy was he? You've probably got all sorts of things in your head about, well, he was a merciful man, he's a forgiving man. We know a lot about him just from what he did. He was a healer. He was the sort of guy that would be, it said he healed all of their sick. You know, he'd travel somewhere, and people would turn up, and he'd just heal all of them. So he was a generous guy. He wasn't stingy about his power, right? He was open to people. He related well with all kinds of people, right? There's stories about him hanging out with tax collectors and prostitutes. He had disciples. We have him with Pharisees, like religious leaders. He was comfortable with everyone, right? I reckon he would have been a pretty good guy. Easy guy to hang out with. I want to take three little stories from the Gospels that maybe can highlight some things about Jesus and the way he was with people. And maybe we can just learn a few things so that when we are out in the world, it would be like being with Jesus when we're with people. The first is from Luke 19, and it's a story of Zacchaeus. Who's heard this story before? If you've been to Sunday school, you would have heard it. It's like a great little Christian cartoon story for me. Let's read. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. He was a crafty man. He sort of, I know how to get there, I'm going to climb a tree. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up at him and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter. Do you know people that mutter? What do they say? No, I've just deleted. He has gone to be the guest of a sinner, right? Do you know people like that? Don't look at them. Zacchaeus stood up and said, "Lord, look. Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Right, it's a familiar story. A lot of us have heard it. So this guy's a chief tax collector. He's not just an ordinary tax collector. He's the boss tax collector. Right, so it means he was very wealthy, and he's obtained all this wealth basically from stealing from the locals to give money to the Romans and just taking his cut as well. Right, so he was a thief. He was hated by the people. Right, and he was short, so they could just kick him out of the crowd. So this guy just tried to inconspicuously just climb a tree and kind of watch what was going on. I just wanted to see Jesus. It didn't say he was trying to get Jesus' attention or anything like that, impress Jesus. He just wanted to watch, right? He's the kind of guy that would just be sort of at the back of the crowd, just sort of, what's this dude Jesus all about? Jesus noticed that, right? Jesus, I guess, he would treat that step that Zacchaeus took of climbing a tree just to have a look, like a step of faith, like Zacchaeus had taken a step towards Jesus. Jesus noticed it, and do you know what was his response to Zacchaeus? What did he do? Was he like tax collector? Calls him out. No. What did he do? He said, "Come down. I'm going to have lunch with you today. I want to come over and hang out with you." And all the people are like, "Whoa, Jesus, you got it backwards, man. He's a dodgy tax collector." Like they needed to tell him that. I'm pretty sure Jesus knew. Jesus knew his name. Just picked it out of thin air. That was a good guess. He would have known he was a tax collector, right? And a bad dude. But Jesus didn't care. He didn't focus on his sin. He just called him out and he honored him. He said, "I'm a big deal in this town. Look at all these people. I'm coming to your house for lunch. I want to hang out with you." I wonder if we treat people that way. "I want to hang out with you. I want to get to know you. Don't worry about the sin stuff." You'll notice that Jesus didn't even get a chance to preach to him. He just repented because he had been honored as a person by Jesus. Go to the next slide. I wonder, do I just see the person's failings before I see the man or the woman that might maybe be trapped in sin, right? Jesus was there as a shepherd, and he was like, he considered himself, "I'm here to save these people." And for some reason, he's got himself into this position of like working with the Romans. And he's a hated person, but I'm here to save him. I'm not here to judge him, right? And that came with, like, repentance came from that, from honoring him. The next story, you probably, a lot of you would have heard, is Jesus and his disciples are wandering along, and they come through this Samaritan town, right? And they're going through Samaria, which is odd for Jews because they would rather go around Samaria than go through it. They hated the Samaritans. Jesus and his disciples, they come to this town. Jesus is like, "It's hot, it's lunchtime. Can you guys go and get some food? I'm just going to chill here." There's a well, right? And he's thirsty. He's sitting at this well waiting. And a woman comes up to the well to draw some water. And he sees her. He's like, "Look, can I have a drink?" You guys know this story? "Can I have a drink, please?" And she said, "Whoa, hold on. Why are you asking me? Why are you, a Jewish man, asking me, a Samaritan woman, for water? You guys don't even talk to us Samaritans." You know, like, Jesus had the perfect out to not even be able to talk with this lady. He didn't need to. And he says to her, he says, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for water, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water," saying, "I've got water that it's so much better than what you can give me," right? And she goes, "Oh, that sounds good. I'd like some of that water, please." And he says, "Okay, go get your husband, come back, and I'll give you some water," right? He's kind of prompting her, and she says, "Oh, well, actually, I don't have a husband." Okay, that's okay. But he says, "Okay, yes, no, you don't have a husband. And actually, the fact is you've had 5 husbands, and the man you're with now is not even your husband," right? He calls her out, big time, mic drop, boom. And she's like, "Whoa, okay, you've got me." And she does, she confesses, "Yeah, I can see you're a prophet. You know some things about me." So then they go into this big discussion about worship and the Jews and Samaritans. And eventually it leads to Jesus saying, revealing to her, "I am the Messiah," right? She's like, "Oh, when the Messiah comes, he'll tell us all, he'll be able to explain everything." And he goes, "I'm that guy." And I think about that, I was like, "Oh, that's a cool little conversation." But the fact is, Jesus chose a dodgy Samaritan woman to be the first person he told about being the Messiah. It's pretty big news, right? If it was me, thank goodness it wasn't, but if it was me, I'd probably be somewhere in Jerusalem standing on a up at the temple or something. Hey, everybody, it's Passover, and there's lots of people around. I'm the Messiah, you know, like announce it somehow. Jesus is like, nah, I'm going to value this woman. She's, you know, like he could see value in her as a human being. And he chose to tell her, Samaritan. We hate the Samaritans though, right? What an amazing gesture. And she ends up running off to find the whole town and brings them out. And they all believe in Jesus. So it's this amazing conversion of this whole town of Samaritans. I think it's just such an amazing thing that Jesus did, a gesture, you know, of value to people. He saw past that cultural boundary that would, I mean, maybe there's cultural things that would make me not want to talk to certain people in my world or your world. But he just kind of cuts right through all of them. And that's amazing. Imagine if Jesus had stuck to that stereotype, you know, of Samaritans. He could have, and he would have just been totally normal to do that. No one would have blinked an eye if he had just said, oh, dodgy Samaritan woman, I don't care, I'm not going to talk to you today. But no, he valued her. He talked, he had a conversation with her. Okay, moving on. Third story, right? There's another one. This one goes quick. Matthew 16, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, I assume that's how you actually pronounce that word. We'll move on. Who do people say the Son of Man is? Who do people say I am? Right, you guys got the ear to the ground. They replied, some say you're John the Baptist. Others say you're Elijah. And still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Okay, well, what about you? Who do you say I am? Simon Peter speaks up. We've talked about Simon Peter, the last 2 weeks. He kind of took on, oh, right, this is my moment. I'm going to speak for all the disciples. He says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. In that moment, Simon nailed it, right? He did a lot of things wrong in his life, but this moment, I think he probably, from then on, you know, he would have been telling people about that moment. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood. So it's actually like, oh, you didn't even think of it yourself, Simon. But by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter. And on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. Right, he gives Simon a new name. Many of you heard this story as well. What does Peter mean? Rock, right? He's basically saying, I'm going to call you Rock from now on. Right? Whatever you've been known as before, from now on, I'm going to call you Rock. I'm going to speak something into you because you're going to be a solid force, something that is permanent and strong in the kingdom. See, Peter's act of faith was just to speak up and just say, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. See, Messiah, what does that mean? It's a Jewish term. That means they're expecting, they're waiting for this deliverer to come and get rid of Rome. And the Messiah was this kind of prophesied dude that would turn up and make everything better. So he's saying, that's you, Jesus. And he says, you're Son of the living God. Now, I might be over-researching here, but the Son of the living God, right? Rome was the power at the time. Rome was in charge, okay? And Julius Caesar, he was the dude that was the main guy in charge of Rome, right? The emperor, when Jesus was young. He eventually died, but Julius Caesar decided to call himself God. He deified himself and said, as Caesar, I am God. I'm a deity. He died eventually, and his son, Augustus, took over, right? Now, Augustus decided, well, Julius was my dad, and he's God. So what am I? I am the Son of God. And he would call himself, he gave himself the title, Son of God, right? And so this is the guy that's in charge of the whole world right now when they're having this conversation. So Peter says, you're the Messiah, you're the deliverer of Israel, And you're even greater than Caesar. You're greater than all of Rome. You're the Son of the living God, not the one that died. Right? What an amazing statement of faith from Peter. Jesus, you know, recognizes this faith and gives Peter a new name. The rock. And the name, the word Petros that he gave him essentially means it's a shaped rock, a rock that's useful, not just a like sharp, pointy, dodgy old rock, but something that I could lay as a foundation stone, something useful, okay? Jesus' new name for Peter was to do with his future calling in the kingdom, okay? Not about what he was doing now. And Peter took some time to fit this name, right? He was rock, right? And people started to call him rock. I don't know if it sounded weird, because we have translated, but it could have been a bit strange, you know, be calling him rock. But he was a bit of a rash guy, right? He was prone to fly off the handle a little bit. He was that kind of dude. And we see moments of Jesus gets arrested. Peter's got a sword, so he whips it out and cuts off someone's ear. He just freaks out and cuts off a dude's ear. Right, Jesus is like, whoa, just chill out, it's okay. And then a few hours later, Jesus has been arrested and he's about to be crucified. And someone says, oh, you're Peter, that's right, you're that guy that was with Jesus. He's like, oh, no, that's not me, no. And he denies Jesus. I'm like, oh, Peter, you know, he's a rock. He's supposed to be like solid. He's supposed to be the guy that you can rely on. He's been given this name, but he still hasn't quite figured out how to act it, right? Interesting that Jesus got him to walk on the water, eh? And he did that, but then he sank. Like, maybe he at that moment he was stepping into his new calling as a rock, right? Standing on the water and under the water. But if we read on, like later on in the New Testament, Peter wrote these two books, 1st and 2nd Peter, these letters that he wrote to people. What was his major themes? He talked about being living stones, being built together into the church of God. He talked about Jesus being the chief cornerstone. The word rock became his kind of his cry. This is who I am. And by the time, like it was years and years later that he wrote those two books, he was like, I've stepped into my calling. I am now, and he's even referred to as a pillar of the church, a pillar. Right, he became this strong, reliable, permanent guy that people could rely on and led the church. Jesus spoke that into him years before he actually started acting like a rock. Hey. See, we need to learn to be like Jesus. Take our eyes off the sin of people, the failings of people around us, and learn to see them with Jesus' eyes. Right? Here's something to think about. Did you know your failure and your sin is not your defining characteristic to God? It's not the thing that he thinks about when he thinks about you. He doesn't go, oh, he's so-and-so. Well, I'm not going to mention anything, but he doesn't think about the disappointments, right? He sees you with Christ's eyes. He sees you with those eyes that can see what he has for you. The future you, right? I wonder if we need to learn to see ourselves that way. Hey, see our sin, it doesn't surprise God. It might surprise us over and over again when we sin. Oh, whoops, did it again, right? But God's like, I'm not surprised at all. But he knows that we're tied, as long as we're tied up, focused on that sin, we're not going to become what he's called us to be, right? Now, I used to play rugby. You wouldn't know it from looking at me now, but I used to play a bit of touch rugby, a bit of rugby. And one thing I used to notice was if I was to, say, get the ball, run off down the field, I would notice that somebody that I knew was slower than me would be able to catch me, tackle me, right? But if it was the other way around and I was chasing them, I could usually catch them. Anyone else that plays rugby notice this, or am I going crazy? It's easier to chase somebody down than it is to run away on the rugby field. Unless they've got a knife or something and then it's, you know, it's life or death. If they've got a knife on a rugby field, I think somebody should do something about that. But I think it's because we're wired to have something to focus on and run towards, to run after, right? If I'm stuck looking over my shoulder all the time at my sin or at my circumstances, I can't run fast. I can't streak off and into the future. I need something to focus on, something to head towards, right? There's a verse that says, without vision, people perish. And maybe not perish like you're going to die, like, but perish like live without any kind of sense of purpose. Live without anything to brag about. Just wonder what happened to your life. That's kind of like perishing to me. I want to live in a way that's like running forward, right? So I need to move on, right? Jesus, though, he doesn't ignore sin altogether, right? He doesn't completely ignore it. He just doesn't focus on it. He acknowledges it. Yeah, you've had five husbands. Yep. Yes, you're a tax collector. Whatever, right? I can see past that, and I want to move us forward. Okay, so that's Jesus. Okay, next slide. Before I learn to see others the way that Christ saw them, I need to learn how to live forgiven. I need to learn, leave behind those questions like, am I really saved? Oh, I don't know. I'm still struggling with things. Your preoccupation with sin. Maybe it's just me. I don't know if you've got a preoccupation with sin, but or your failings or things that aren't working out just yet. We need to learn to say, you know, Jesus has forgiven me. Now get over it and move on. Like, be that hard on myself. Stop being a baby. Move forward, right? Paul talks about being like as infants and then as grown-ups, right? We need to learn to move out of that, move forward. We're forgiven, now move on. See yourself the way he sees you. Jesus wants to give you a new name. A name that is linked to his calling for you. Not from your sinful nature, your sinful past, but from your redeemed future. Right? He's going to speak that name over you. It's a future name that you're going to come into. Right? So we can't get so bothered about what's going on right now, but learn that Jesus is actually, he's speaking my future into life. Now, if God has a vision for my life, a future, right? Now I can be sure that he has the same, well, a future, a vision for the people around me. Yeah, that makes sense. He has this for everyone, right? So can I then, knowing that he has a future for me, when I'm relating to people in my world, can I think, God has a future for them too? And maybe it's different from what they're in now. Maybe they're a Peter and they still have to come into that. How can I be somehow an encourager to bring them towards that? Should I be the sort of person who focuses them on all the garbage around them at the time? On all the reasons they don't stack up or they don't measure up to my expectations? Or should I be a person that actually learns to go, nah, you're going to be a rock. I can see it in you, right? Be an encourager. I have to learn to see the person and affirm who they are. Be an encourager. You probably all know people that when you're with them, you feel better, right? Because they focus on the good stuff about you, right? And then there's other people like, I shouldn't say any names. Then there's other people who seem to suck the life, right? Because they're focused on the negatives, right? I don't have any names to say. I don't think that I was thinking of anyone in particular. I can't look at anyone right now. But I need to learn to be an encourager, right? Just lifting up people's eyes with my words. Set them on the future. And acknowledge their faith, right? We sometimes expect people's faith to look like these massive big claims, like coming forward at church or writing a book or, you know, some sort of kind of message in the sky sort of moments. But actually we need to learn to acknowledge those small steps of faith. Like the fact that anyone's even at church or the fact that they asked you a question or go, oh, you go to church. That's a step of faith, right? It's an opening for a moment, a discussion that I could have with that person. Treat it like faith because that's what Jesus did. Took that moment and said, okay, I can work with that. You're showing some interest, okay. You know, and then use that to guide the conversation. Cool. Now, I had a boy, I'm a teacher, and I teach at Hamilton Boys High in Hamilton. Had a student who decided, was a Christian boy, and decided to come out in class in front of everyone and tell us all about it. This moment, if you know what that means, he's decided to tell everyone he's gay in class, and he's struggling with this. And it was a moment as a teacher that I went, whoa, what do I do here? He knows I'm a Christian. How do I manage this situation? Right? I could have freaked out, and there's probably many things I could have done and just sort of said, well, you know, you can't do that. Don't be stupid. Oh, you're just living in sin. Oh, all sorts of things, condemning the guy. But I felt like God just said to me, like, take that moment and just talk to him. Be open. Discuss it with him. Even if just love the guy. Don't even talk about it. Don't bring it up. Jesus wouldn't. Just love him. Right? And I'm not saying that anything I did would fix the guy, whatever that means. But I'm just saying that as a Christian, my test, my witness to the people around me is to love the way that Jesus would love. Right? Don't freak out. Don't get all kind of like, you know, defensive. Just be open and caring to people. 1 Peter. Here's Peter again. He's onto it by this stage. And this is the Message version. Love makes up for practically anything. Be quick to give a meal to the hungry, a bed to the homeless. Do it cheerfully. Be generous with the different things that God has given you, or God gave you, passing them around so all can get in on it. If words, let it be God's words. If help, let it be God's hearty help. What awesome words to live by. And I think it has something of the way that Jesus approached people. There's so many times where it said he just healed all of their sick. He didn't line them up and qualify them and go, well, you're not ready for a healing just yet. You haven't got enough faith, or you've been naughty this week. He just healed them all. Right? We used to have a little banner up that said, throw love around like confetti. Well, if you know anything about confetti, it just goes where it wants. You throw it and it lands where it wants to, right? In the most inconvenient places. But I think that something of Jesus' love needs to feel like that. We just give it to whoever's around, whoever's available. I'm going to give you God's love, right? And I need to learn to pray for people that I'm surrounded by. Hey, rather than just being me and all these people in my life, it should be me and God. And I can pray and I can influence the atmosphere and the way that those conversations take place by praying. I need to learn to do this. I'm not really good at it, but I think something for me this year is actually like learn to go, well, there's people in my life right now that I could just pray for, that God would open up a door to a conversation. Right? And I think also that God is challenging us to ask God for his revelation about people. Ask God, what do you have to say to this person? Is there something that I could say to them that makes them know God knows you, God noticed you? Because there's no way that anyone else could have known that. And you can speak directly to somebody's heart, right? Romans 4:17 says, God, who gives life to the dead and calls the things which are not as though they were. That's the same God that spoke to Peter. He said, you know, the things that were not, he calls them a rock and it did not fit. But something in Jesus, God in Jesus said, call him a rock. Call out that part of him. We need to learn to be like that. A little phrase that has just been sitting in my head, just going around and around and around for me, and I think for all the people around me, is this phrase. I didn't even bother to look it up, but he makes all things new. And for me, that's such a powerful statement of God's intent with us. Like, he cares. It doesn't bother him so much of where I am right now, because God is in the business of making things new, not just fixed up, covered in bandages and sort of just surviving. He makes us, you, the people around us, brand new, right? I saw a picture of a piece of art. And if I was to sit down and make a piece of art, I guess I would use the best paints and colors and things to make the best possible piece of artwork that I could. But I felt like God said he is making artworks out of people, and it involves brokenness. It involves stuff that's been broken, darkness, things that you would hide. Jesus is going to use those broken pieces to make an even more beautiful piece of artwork. He's going to fuse it with his color and his life. The brokenness in I think there's a word for somebody here today. God is going to weave a tapestry out of all that brokenness with his amazing color and love. He doesn't ignore the brokenness, right? He will use it. See, I've had many prophetic words given to me over the years, right? If you've been in church, you probably have as well. And one thing I remember, what I've noticed is I've never felt once condemned by God. I've never felt like he's calling me out or wanting to expose me in front of people. But he wants to gather me. That's the heart of God. Is, come in close. I've got a future for you. I'm going to speak that into you. It was always to do with potential. It was always to do with the things he had for the future. Right? That's his heart. Marty, last week, he spoke about dreams. Right? Dreaming with Jesus. And I feel like God's challenging me. How can I water the seed that's in somebody else? How could I water or speak to the dream in the people around me? Partner with God. Lord, what can I say to them that's going to breathe life into them? That's really what I've got today. I think some of us maybe need to a revelation of how God truly sees you, is not by your reputation or your sin, but he has a new name for your future. There's somebody here that God wants to speak a new name over, right? Focus your heart on something that God's calling you to, not all the stuff that's around me. We need to learn to live forgiven as well. And maybe that's you as well today. And there will be times where I don't feel like I'm living forgiven, right? But learning to just say, no, I am. Jesus forgave me. Move on. And the last thing is just, how can I be a voice of encouragement to the people around me? How can I speak Jesus' words to those people around me? And treating people the way that's going to bring them closer to God. I think that's a challenge for every single one of us. There's people in all of our lives that we can, just a word, a smile, pray for them in quiet. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome.